is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Another episode of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you on March 22nd, 2018. This show proudly sponsored by Defense Soap. Defend what you have built with a whole line of products aimed at combating the funk at DefenseSoap.com. Guy Seiko and his crew doing a great job out there helping out this program. We are going to Mannheim, Pennsylvania today to talk with Mike Moyer, my former boss, for full disclosure, at the National Wrestling Coaches Association. He is the executive director. And what is always an exciting time for wrestling and what's always a very tedious time for the NWCA, Mike. And when I sat there in that office in 2005 to 2008, as soon as the NCAA championships were over, it was that moment where spring sports cutting season seemed to be upon us. And that tide has seemed to slow a little bit. But before we even get into the situations with Eastern Michigan and the positive with Arkansas Little Rock, welcome back to the program. We've got a lot to chat about.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Yeah, it's a long-winded intro, but you've had no problem talking over the years about the reasons to add college wrestling. You were an administrator. You were a coach for a time at George Mason before taking the reins at the NWCA. And when we look at the landscape of college athletics and where wrestling sits in it, what do you feel is the most important thing for the wrestling community to understand about the health of college wrestling, not just in Division I, but across all the levels?
Well, across all the levels, we're really having incredible success. You know, just not too long ago, we've added our 195th new college wrestling program since 2000. And, of course, what's driving this are the enrollment-driven schools out there. You have a situation where student loan debt nationally is just going through the roof. And then you add to that the competition from the online universities. Now, let's face it, you can get a degree today without ever stepping foot on campus. So when we meet with these college administrators, you know, it's a pretty compelling argument to essentially suggest to them, if they don't offer these extracurricular activities like sports that are important to the students, they're going to go somewhere else that does, or they're not going to step foot on campus at all. They're just going to get their degree online. So, you know, next year we've got 24 new college wrestling programs coming online just for next year. And we've pretty consistently been between 15 and 25 a year. So we're seeing really, really strong growth. But again, the key is at the enrollment-driven schools. University of Arkansas at Little Rock is an example that even at the Division I level, there's a growing number of enrollment-driven schools out there. So that's the low-hanging fruit. We have to make sure while we're doing that, we're doing everything we possibly can to keep our existing programs, particularly at the Division I level, strong. And when I say Division I level, you know, those are the ones that typically are not enrollment driven. So it's a different business model. Most of the D2, D3, NAIA, junior college, and women's programs tend to be more of the enrollment driven variety. So that's a snapshot of where we are. I might also say we're up to 44 intercollegiate women's teams. And there's not a week that goes by that my phone doesn't ring from another administration wanting to start it. So we have a lot to celebrate. But as you had mentioned in the introduction, the Eastern Michigan situation is just a reminder that we can never think that we're there. That's every day we need to make sure we're keeping the program strong, that the ones we have out there.
And one thing that looks to me, though, and of course, I'm playing the advocate role here. I'm not playing the journalist role at the moment, is, you know, when we talk about making your teams indispensable, that seems to be such a moving target, because if we look at Eastern Michigan, they were on top of the all-academic standings 2-3 years ago. They've got kids working in the community. Their APR rate amongst men's sports was the highest at the school. So everything that says this is why you want to keep a team, it seems like that, okay, we've got everything. There's no way you can get cut. And then all of a sudden, you know, wrestling wasn't the only one to feel the burn here. And successful programs like men's swimming, we've seen successful programs at Eastern getting cut here. So how frustrating is that to know that you've got a staff, for example, at Eastern Michigan, Dave Bolyard and his crew, have done everything right to make their sport one of those ones that you're not supposed to be checking off your list for discipline problems. You're not checking off your list for not performing. I mean, they're doing everything right there. It's got to be frustrating.
You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, that is an example of a coach that's doing it all right. I would say this, though. If you ask me, what is the single most impactful thing that we can do to protect our Division I programs, I would tell you that we need to have a strong, organized group of business leaders in and around every community. So back in January, the National Wrestling Coaches Association merged operations with Wrestlers in Business Network. And Wrestlers in Business has been out there, it's been operating for 5 or 6 years as a standalone entity. And it's had a lot of success. Probably as it relates to our topic today, you think of the Cleveland State program 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, when the announcement was made that they were dropping it. That program was saved in 9 days because we had a very strong Wrestler and Business Network board in Cleveland. And in every city, there's a handful of business leaders that no university administration could ever afford to upset. And at Cleveland, that was a classic example. So long story short, our strategy going forward, now that Wrestlers in Business is an operating unit within the National Wrestling Coaches Association, is we are going to be very intentional at setting up chapters in and around every college program we have in the country. Well, we're going to start with the Division I level because, again, that's where you have a different business model. And had we had something like that in place, this decision at Eastern Michigan would have never happened or anywhere else.
Yeah, one thing it seems like the model for that, even before Wrestlers in Business popped up, was back when Arizona State dropped its program for, in this case, a matter of hours. I believe it was 72 to 96 hours, where Art Martori, Jerry Colangelo, business leaders in the Arizona market, the Phoenix area, said, nope. So, you know, we've seen it, seen the success of how important the alumni and the business leaders of the area. And that's something that tapping into those people that wrestle, because even where I went to school at Old Dominion, you look at what Steve Martin has done to tap into that alumni base and say, well, this guy owns this business. He wrestled at ODU. This guy owns this. It's been a collective, and those are the active alumni, even though there's not a WIBN chapter in that particular market. It's the same general concept. So do you think Eastern Michigan is kind of overlooked in that regard because the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor is such in such close proximity that it seems like the business leaders in that particular region of Michigan may lean towards the University of Michigan versus Eastern Michigan?
Well, what's very interesting is the president at Eastern Michigan University used to be the president at Northern State University, which is up in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And it was just a few years ago where he dropped wrestling out there. And it wasn't a Wrestler and Business Network, but it was the same concept. We had a group of very organized business leaders in the Aberdeen, South Dakota area. They had called me up, asked me if I could come out. Long story short, we raised $366,000 in 9 days. And it's sort of, you know, when that happened on the heels of the administration saying no one cared about the program, there was no money, there was no this, there was no that, again, it just accentuates the importance of having organized business leaders in and around all of our college programs. So going back to the Eastern Michigan situation, you know, what doesn't make sense about this decision is Eastern Michigan is itself an enrollment-driven school. You know, from everything I've read, it appears that declining enrollment at the school in general is what has created this budgetary shortfall, and it makes no sense that they would be dropping sports, which are tried and proven to be an important part of increasing enrollment. And so one of the things I want to get to the bottom of is how they're coming up with this idea that they're saving 2.4 million or whatever the number is. Because if you take into account the tuition revenue from the athletes of these four sports, it doesn't add up.
Yeah, because these are mostly, I don't know, I think softball, I believe, is an equivalency sport. I think they're all equivalency sports. They're not headcount sports. So you're not
correct.
You're not getting a full, you know, you got, it's not 25 full rides on your wrestling team. You're looking at, and I believe Eastern Michigan might even be 9-9 in-state, and the equivalency out-of-state is not quite the same. So they're not, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but I remember when one of the coaches that went through and applied before Bolliard got the job was saying, yeah, it's a 9-9 in-state, but it's not a 9-9 out-of-state. That could have changed in the last 10 years. So my information may be a little bit off there, but we're looking at it's the scholarship money alone doesn't seem to add up. But all those athletes, as you said, Mike, this has been kind of one of your speaking points, is they're paying tuition. They're paying a considerable sum of money, or they're getting the grant money that the school's getting some funds for them simply being on campus. So moving along that argument, you know, it just seems like, what, a year and a half ago, they announced that they were building this multi-million-dollar facility for these sports. And then there's a change in leadership. You know, Heather Leich was at Ohio State, then she was at Eastern Michigan, now she's at Pitt. So she's been around wrestling programs. And then it seems like when there's a positive AD for wrestling, and when they move, I mean, and then there's decisions. I mean, first of all, you talk with administrators all the time. How many times do you feel it's the AD's hands that are tied, or it's the AD making these decisions? It seems to be a very divisive point on who to blame in these situations.
Yeah, well, no two schools are ever the same. That's one thing for sure. The circumstances are different from school to school. So I'm still trying to get my arms around where this decision is actually coming from. But what makes no sense is in at a university that needs enrollment. It would, in fact, not too far from where Eastern Michigan is located, there's a little private school called Adrian College that has a president. His name's President Dockings, who actually wrote a book. And the essence of the book is for university administrations to leverage sports to grow enrollment. I mean, it's a tried and proven strategy. And you know, their tuition at Eastern Michigan is somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000. So if you have 30 wrestlers on the wrestling team, there's $600,000 of revenue. And it doesn't seem like they're showing that as revenue in these with these four sports that they're dropping. And so we're going to get to the bottom of it, but I can tell you this, I like our chances at Eastern Michigan of saving this. I'm not saying we're in the clear by any stretch, but we have a very, very well-organized wrestling community in Michigan. We have access to a lot of political leaders and to, you know, to the people that can really make a difference. And I like our chances. We're just getting started. But more of a national strategy, we're trying to change the conversation of Division I Olympic sports to move away from more of a revenue model to more of an enrollment model. And Eastern Michigan is really a poster program for a school that should be leveraging sports teams to drive an enrollment model.
When we look at why you think that this one's a favorable situation. We've been in some situations where, like at Boise State, nobody's answering the phone, nobody's answering interview requests. They're just saying, nope, head in the sand. What's that early dialogue been like? And also, when we look at the numbers of athletes that were cut, we're going to look at gender equity, because when these decisions get made, it's often thrown as like, well, we can't bring wrestling back because then we'd fall out of compliance. And of course, the NWCA and Title IX haven't always gotten along as part of, you know, 20 years ago, the lawsuits and such. But how has the Title IX dilemma, so to speak, with gender equity tried? You know, have you changed your strategy on that in dealing with bringing a team back? Are you working with other sports that are getting cut to try to, you know, team up and say, all right, you bring wrestling and softball back, or you work with field hockey or somebody to bring a sport back? How has that been working?
Yes, we're going to work with all the sports. Because again, as an enrollment-driven school, they should be adding sports, not dropping sports. And again, this is the conversation that we're going to have with state legislatures. It's the combination we're going to have, the conversation we're going to have with all the people that matter. And it just makes absolutely no sense. What happens sometimes is presidents get pressure from faculty because they haven't gotten raises. Maybe an academic division's been eliminated. And the faculty will be saying, well, why haven't you touched athletics? And the president should say, because if it wasn't for athletics, our problems would be exponentially worse. And so that's what needs to be exposed at Eastern Michigan, that if it wasn't for these sports programs, their problems would be worse, and they will be worse. And we've encountered this many other times before. And you had mentioned Boise State. I just want to mention that I hope everyone out there across the country realizes the Boise State situation is far from over as well. We have not given up on that at all. And every day that goes by, we're actually working on that program. And I'm not at liberty to get into the details, but I can just say, generally speaking, the key for turning this around is changing the conversation of Division I Olympic sports from a revenue model to an enrollment model. Of course, the enrollment is what drives the critical revenue that these schools need.
When we talk with the additions and subtractions of Division I wrestling, we were so happy with Arkansas, Little Rock. As a matter of fact, Eastern Michigan's kind of almost overshadowed it. But when people ask, when there's a program cut, they immediately come after. They come after you, or they ask, "What's the NWCA doing? What's the NWCA doing?" I sat in that office for 3 years. I heard the phone calls. But so let's be quite honest. When this situation, even before a school is dropped, what is Mike Moyer? What is the NWCA doing on a daily basis to add and promote programs? How many phone calls do you think you make across each division? I mean, what is your day like when it says Mike Moyer's got I found a target. Let's go after it.
Well, I can tell you in general, to get, like, we're at 24 new college teams for next year. And by the way, two Division I teams, Presbyterian College, a Division I men's and women's program, and now University of Arkansas at Little Rock, you know, another Division I program. But I have to tell you, it's probably 200, you know, it's communicating with 200 schools in order to get 24. I mean, it's no different than a college coach when he's recruiting. You know, it's a numbers game. You have to reach out to enough prospects in order to, you know, in this case, get 24 to actually commit. And it's usually a conversation with the president. It's a conversation with the athletic director. A lot of times it's conversations with the board of trustees. It's several trips. I mean, it's a very labor intensive thing in order to do that. Another critical piece of our strategy is we have the CEO Leadership Academy, and I've come to realize there is nothing more important than making sure that the coaches of our existing programs are the absolute best stewards of their programs as possible. So we provide 100 full scholarships every year for deserving head and assistant college coaches to go through a very comprehensive CEO leadership training program. And it has nothing to do with the technical, tactical aspects of coaching. But it has everything to do with marketing and fundraising and promotion and branding and those kinds of things. So that's gone a long way in making sure that the coaches of our current programs are the best stewards possible. But it also makes sure that we have a deep pool of well-trained coaches to step into these new programs that we're getting started. Because it doesn't do any good to jump through all these hoops to get a new program started if you're not going to have a great coach to lead it. So we invest heavily into the coaching development piece of this. So just those two things consume a large part of our day in the NWCA office on any given day.
When you look at the addition of Arkansas Little Rock, as we actually, you know, before we close the book on Eastern Michigan, let's just give us an update, because what happens as we get the, you know, we'll talk about the Coaches Academy here, because that's relevant to the Arkansas Little Rock situation here in a minute. But, it was almost a blueprint when we had a program cut when I was there in those 3 years. It was almost like the blueprint to the call to action, because this, 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 and this. How has that blueprint changed? What call to action? What's being done right now outside of the talking to the business leaders? What's something that the wrestling community listening to this program can do to help mobilize and bring back Eastern Michigan wrestling? Or, you know, if they're swimming fans as part of the show, or they want to bring back every sport, what are things that they can do to help this effort at in Ypsilanti?
Sure. Well, actually, before I answer, let me just mention a third prong, the NWCA, and that's where actually there's a fourth prong too. The third prong would be working with state legislatures and state board of regents to develop a more sustainable model for, particularly for Division One. I think we have the other divisions under control. Just they all buy into the enrollment model, so they're there. But at the Division One level, we're spending a lot of time and energy and resources right now to educate state legislatures and board of regents on why they should be looking at their Division One Olympic sports differently. You know, where they can actually be contributing to the enrollment. Not every Division One school is enrollment. When you get to the big land grant universities, you know, Penn State and Iowa and Alabama and Auburn, they're obviously not starving for students. But there are a lot of other sort of mid-major Division One schools out there, some of the private institutions that need enrollment badly. So that would be sort of the third prong. And the fourth prong is we've established a coalition with other sport coaches associations. We work very closely with swimming and men and women's volleyball and a lot of the other coaches associations out there because we know their strengths and numbers, and that's going to serve us very well with the Eastern Michigan initiative because we have other sports involved. So those would kind of be the four things we're really focused on. Back to your question about Eastern Michigan. So right now we are in the process of executing a statewide grassroots campaign. You know, we're getting the wrestling community in Michigan to contact their local state representative, their local state senator, the governor's office, the Board of Regents. And so we're working it from the bottom, but we're also working it from the top down. We're talking to influential business leaders. We're talking to politicians. And so we can work from the top down as well. And we're putting together a strategy that very shortly will include the national wrestling community. So I need a few more days of strategy building before we'll be able to get back to the national wrestling community with some specific things that they can do. While we're doing that, the swimming community is doing the same thing. We're in very close communication with them. We're going to be working with the other sports to just make sure that all of this is coordinated. And but we know from experience that the taxpayers in the state, in this case in Michigan, are going to have the most influence with the lawmakers and the politicians, and that's why we've started there.
We've seen things float around. We've got football coaches talking to the football team saying, hey, you know what, coach, you're not welcome here. If wrestling's gone, you're not welcome in our doors anymore. I mean, we're seeing things that, you know, there's all sorts of letters and attacks that happen when things like this happen. I've never seen where you've got a high-profile high school football coach telling the football coach at the school that's dropping wrestling, yeah, if you don't keep wrestling, don't come to our school for recruits. Never seen it before.
Yeah, that's spectacular. I mean, that's spectacular. And that's just, again, the resolve within the wrestling community is so inspiring. I mean, when I wake up every day, it just inspires me to do what I do. And the outpouring of support that I've gotten and the phone calls I've gotten from people, not just throughout Michigan, but from out the country, is just very, very encouraging. And I have no doubt that I like our chances in Michigan. I don't want to suggest for a second that we're in the clear because we're not. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but we have so many important pieces in place that most times we don't have that it's better than a 50-50 chance that we can win this one.
And how has that changed over the past 10 years? Of course, we've mentioned the Wrestlers in Business Network, but it used to be like, you know, you when you hear about a cut, it's a surprise, and then we're scrambling to try to mobilize, and it's, you know, like I said, it's that stock what used to be a stock email, call to action, call this, call that.
How much
more proactive, and, you know, it's not something you put a press release out every time you're trying to add a program, but, you know, it seems like we're adding more than we're taking away, but still, how proactive can you be to solidify a program? Or, you know, I mean, did this catch you by surprise? And, you know, how ready were you to deploy a plan of attack, so to speak?
Well, you know, we're never surprised because we know that there's virtually no Division One wrestling program that's safe. You know, obviously some of your top, yeah, you know, you look at the Penn States and the Ohio States, and, you know, they're in a pretty good spot. But for the most part, I hope nobody's driving to work during the day saying I'm safe, because as is the case at Eastern Michigan, it's an example of a coach really doing everything right. And sometimes there are things completely beyond the coach's control that could doom a program. We've implemented a very comprehensive a database within the NWCA that captures a lot of critical information from all the schools across the country. You know, we know what their Title IX compliance numbers look like. We know what their win-loss record. We know the size of the rosters. We have a very good pulse on sort of vital signs, I guess, would be the best way to explain it, for all of our schools across the country. And, you know, there are some key indicators that help us stay more focused on the programs that would typically be more vulnerable. And it's, you know, again, at these MAC schools, you know, the most up-to-date data that I have access to, it looks like $24 million of their $30 million athletic department budget is funded with institutional dollars. And as money gets tighter and tighter and tighter, you just know that that's going to become problematic. And it's not just a problem at Eastern Michigan, but that's where the enrollment, you know, the number one priority of schools like Eastern Michigan should be, how do we increase enrollment? And one of the best ways to do that is to have cost-effective sports, like wrestling.
One thing in the past we've also gone after is, you know, you talk about institutional support and how much student fees have played a role in these decisions, for example, in getting the student governments involved. Where has that been, and how successful has that thought process been, being, all right, well, if they're going to cut sports that are using student fees, at least the students should have a say in this?
Well, that's, yes, we've been very successful with that argument in the past. It's the taxation without representation model, where at some, like the mid-major institutions, upwards to 80% of the athletic department budget is funded with student fees. So what happens is the universities are taxing these students this fee, yet the students typically have no say or very little say in when decisions like this are made. At Eastern Michigan, they don't have a student fee. It's just sort of lumped in with institutional funds. My instincts tell me that most of it's probably still coming off the backs of student tuition and state revenues that they might get from the state government. But that's something that we're going to certainly drill down to see if we can get our arms around how much of this is coming off the backs of the students. And if it is a significant part, why aren't the students more included in this decision?
Well, we'll keep tabs on what's going on with Eastern Michigan. There's a lot of push on social media, a lot of educators, a lot of people. And this is, again, the buzzword or buzz phrase you like to use a lot. I mean, these are the people that are going to be coaching our kids. These are the ones that are going to be sending their kids to Eastern Michigan, or insert school name here, because that's where they went and they got a good experience. So that's one thing that always is key. But moving to the positive news of the week, coming off a record-setting attendance in Cleveland at the NCAA Division I Championships on Saturday, an announcement that the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, UALR, will be adding a Division I wrestling program to join Presbyterian, which has already announced the hiring of Mark Cody as its director of wrestling, so to speak. And take us a little bit through the timeline of where UALR started to enter the fray, why this type of school. Obviously, they don't have football, so that's one plus right off the bat with the mm-hmm. gender equity numbers, but what made UALR attractive, and what made the sport of wrestling attractive for UALR?
Well, what's really remarkable when you think about it is I think back in 2006, 2005, somewhere around there, we didn't have a single high school or college program in the state. And, you know, one of the most awesome human beings I've ever been around, of course, is Greg Hatcher. And it's been unbelievably exciting and thrilling to be able to work side by side with Greg. You know, today there's over 65 high school wrestling teams in the state. And I think this is the seventh college team, if you include men's and women's programs in Arkansas. But Greg and I had been working with the university probably over 4 years. You know, we've made multiple trips there. And as you can imagine, there's just lots of hurdles and lots of challenges in trying to get something like this done. But at the end of the day, you know, it's an example of a university that's looking for a way to expand its footprint and to also find an inexpensive way of attracting high quality students to campus. And, you know, largely in part due to Greg Hatcher, we were also successful in finding another donor out there that contributed $100,000 to this cause. You know, of course, everyone's aware of the announcement that was made at the NCAA tournament. And it's one of these things where every time you have a success like this, it makes the next one even a little bit easier. And but the model is the enrollment model, you know, getting administrators and state legislators to buy into the important role that Division I Olympic sports can play in helping bring smart students to campus and bringing visibility to the school. One of the other great things about Division I wrestling is typically somewhere in the neighborhood of 85% of Division I schools that sponsor a wrestling program will advance at least one wrestler to the NCAA championships. So the president, the athletic director, the director of development, some of their other administrators were actually in Cleveland to see the finals. And I can assure you they were just blown away with the pageantry and the passion and everything that went along with it. I mean, it was just a great day for our sport. Danny Sterling, the athletic director of Presbyterian College, he was out there as well, and same perspective. It's just like, wow, I had no idea that this is what Division I wrestling is all about.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that once you experience it, you're like, yeah, so... you know, what were those conversations like? I mean, I'm curious on that first, you know, when they step into that arena, be, oh, wow, it's at the Q. It's not at, you know, it's not at a 5,000 seat arena. This thing is at almost a 20,000 seat arena for wrestling. And, you know, I'm just curious on some of the things that were said, like, whoa, there's this many people that, yeah, and it's sold out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just, we were standing in line to get in and they just couldn't believe the mob of people everywhere. Just trying to get in that arena. I mean, it was just, and we're talking about, again, we've never had a Division I program in Arkansas. So you can just imagine those administrators thinking, you know, what in the world is going on? And the outpouring of support that they've gotten has just, you know, when they go to the next president's meeting or the next athletic director's meeting, you know that that feeling is going to get communicated to others. And that's how we build on this success. That's how we get the next one started. And I might add, we are closing in on one or two other possibilities that interestingly enough, you know, the athletic directors have said, man, you know, the announcement of the Arkansas and the Presbyterian program have prompted business leaders in their community to email these administrators saying, wow, why can't this be us? And that's how it works.
And again, just to know that, you know, from a sports perspective, people might look at Presbyterian and Little Rock as like, do they move the needle? Well, they move the needle towards getting us back towards 100 programs, which I know you've said is a goal to get Division I back to 100.
That's right.
And yeah, we have to understand, look at the Utah Valleys. They've got some All-Americans. Look at the teams that are getting, you know, Eastern, for example, would have been a good opportunity to point it to because they had an All-American for the first time since 99. Before they dropped it, but sure, we're seeing the ability of these schools to compete. I mean, I was just looking at a stat this morning about wrestlers from the state of Illinois, which has got a great wrestling heritage. They've had, okay, great, you've got 77 All-Americans from Illinois. Well, only 32 of them have gone to schools at the university, have gone to the University of Illinois. So there's opportunities for even these power states to send kids out. I think 17 different colleges had All-Americans from the state of Illinois, and Arkansas despite not having that high school culture just yet. They border Oklahoma. Okay. They border Missouri. They're in a place where these all Americans that can't all go to the University of Missouri, they can't go all go to Oklahoma State or Oklahoma. They have an opportunity there. But when talking Power Five, people always look at Texas. Mm-hmm. They look at Florida State. They look at Miami. They look at Alabama. They look at Texas A&M. They look at those schools. I mean, how many conversations have been held with those Power Five schools, and how, I mean, how favorable are some of those conversations, and how frustrating can some of those conversations be when it's like, yeah, we can afford it, we just don't want it?
Yeah, well, again, you know, we it's a balance between making sure that we take advantage of the low-hanging fruit, right, which are the, you know, up to this point, it's been the non-Division I programs, and now more of the more obvious enrollment-driven Division I schools out there. So, you know, we never want to take our eye off those balls. But at the same time, I really believe, you know, we will get a wrestling program out of Power Five school. It's just, it is expensive. You know, typically for most of these for many of these non-Division I programs that we're adding, typically we'll provide a $10,000 startup grant and complimentary uniforms. All right. So that's kind of the model there. Not for all of them, but for many of them, that's what we'll do. At Presbyterian College, you know, we had to raise $300,000. And as you know, from working in the NWCA office, Jason, it's a, you know, we're a relatively small PT boat. I mean, it's not a mammoth organization. And so between raising the money to keep our own organization going and then the startup funds, it's a stretch for us. The University of Arkansas at Little Rock program, it was $1.4 million. Typically, the challenge, even at an enrollment-driven Division I school, is facilities. They don't have a practice facility. They don't have a locker room. And that's why, you know, that business model, you know, the startup grant, it's usually somewhere between $300,000 and $1 million, which is a lot better than the $20 million price tag that we typically get from a Power Five school. You know, what the Power Five schools say, yeah, we'll add it, but we don't want to allocate any resources to it. If you can endow the men's team and a women's counterpart, we'll consider it. And $20 million, I don't want to say that it'll never happen, but it's that's really a stretch to come up with that kind of a startup grant. But $300,000 to $1 million, you know, that's, again, we've done it twice in a year, and I think we can continue to find that kind of money. As long as we can just keep counting on some of our extraordinary benefactors to keep writing those checks.
All right, Mike, one thing that we also need to move forward is it hasn't officially come out yet, but we're looking at Hampton Sydney kind of in trouble down there. Had confirmation that they are going to probably drop the program after reinstating it 4 years ago. Any news there that we can pass along, or are we just too early in the process?
Now, one of the things that's been very frustrating to me about that situation, and I've talked to Coach Conkright several times. You know, the school has just, yeah, sometimes administrations think they're saving money by having part-time coaches. And Coach Conkright's a really, really good guy, but, you know, he's only on campus for a couple hours a day to run practice. You really need a full-time coach. And we've got kind of case studies that show the difference in tuition revenue from a part-time coach to a full-time coach. Not too long ago, we actually worked with a college president. It was a little Division III school. Tuition room and board was about $65,000 a year to go there. They had a part-time coach. They had seven or eight wrestlers on the team. They were getting ready to pull the plug. And we worked with the president. We said, let us help you build a case study and just give us 1 year. And at the end of the year, if you don't like what you see, then we'll pull the plug. You know, we worked with them. We got a good full-time coach in there. And in 1 year, they went from seven wrestlers to 33 wrestlers. You know, paying, you know, obviously some get financial aid, but $65,000 a year. So these administrators that will just work with us, we can show them a much better model. But unfortunately, in this case, we just have an administration that was unwilling to heed that advice. And so the program's been fledgling, and I know Coach Conklin's been very frustrated with it, and we are going to at least make a call and make an attempt. You know, I think we have a better chance if we get to the trustees rather than to maybe the administration to see if we could get them to rethink this decision.
Yeah, and again, it's another one of those things where you look at who's in charge and you're like, oh, wow, there's another person in the mix that was at a school that dropped wrestling on their watch. And, you know, it's one of those things that may not be 100% always related, but it's like one of those things where you see the same people. It's like, oh, man, this again. So we'll keep our tabs on Hampton, Sydney. But we've talked about what we can do or what the updates are on Eastern Michigan. We've talked about the positivity behind Arkansas, Little Rock. And any hints out there? I mean, you've kind of nudged that there are some schools that are looking. I mean, just geographically, if people are saying, okay, because Arkansas is kind of, you know, people are asking me for hints. I'm like, well, it's kind of in the southeast, but not really, but kind of south central Midwestern-ish, you know, tall, skinny, short kind of fat guy. You know, it was like, where how do you geographically put Arkansas? But I know there is one out in the west. And when I say west, I mean west. And then I'm not sure about the number two that you were maybe hinting at, but anything that we can just keep our eyes on and be like, okay, we might have another one coming.
The only reason I've shared that, Jason, is I want the wrestling community to know and to have hope, because there are some really, really good things going. I understand, and I feel the same way. This Eastern Michigan thing feels like a sucker punch, right? It just, but we're going to do everything we can to save this Eastern Michigan program, but just know that beneath the surface, we're having some very, very encouraging conversations with more of these, what I would call enrollment-driven Division I schools out there. And I fully expect to see the continued growth that we're having at the non-Division I levels. And I fully expect that we're going to see more schools like University of Arkansas at Little Rock and Presbyterian College. There's definitely some more opportunities like that out there. And I feel like we're closing in on a couple of them. I don't want to jinx myself. I will say this, is a little bit off topic, but it's important for the wrestling community to know. One of the things we have to absolutely make sure that we stay on top of is at the high school level, our high school participation numbers have been declining. And we have since adapted the CEO Leadership Academy to now that we have a high school version of it. Our high school coaches, let's face it, our sport is very demanding. We live in a society where everything's geared towards making things easy. There's nothing easy about wrestling. So we're fully committed to helping our high school, middle school coaches sharpen their recruiting skills so they can be more proficient at recruiting and retaining wrestlers in their programs. But the key is we have to make sure that we always have healthy college rosters. And we can only do that if participation remains healthy at the high school level. So that's just something that needs to be on everybody's radar. And anybody out there who might be listening, you know, we need them to do everything they can to lend a helping hand to their local high school, middle school programs to make sure those participation numbers start growing.
Yeah, all it takes is two kids per program to set records. That's all we're talking about. So more information on those tips at NWCAOnline.com. Mike Moore, Executive Director of the National Wrestling Coaches Association, thanks for giving us a heads up on Arkansas, Little Rock, and what's going on there, and an update on what the NWCA and company are trying to do to save the Eastern Michigan Wrestling Program. That's all we got for now. For our hosts, John McGovern, Terry Brands, Dennis Hall, they'll be back on this show soon enough, I assure you folks. And Mike Moore, I'm Jason Bryan. Thanks for listening to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Subscribe to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast by going to WWRpodcast.com and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, or wherever you find your podcasts. World Wrestling Resource at WorldWrestlingResource.com.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.